Hello. No, wait. No.
Gary, hold on. Waiting for streaming software to go live. Here we go. Oh, blah, 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 blah. There's a picture. And
a picture. Well, as long as it's a picture, we don't need the right picture. We just need a picture.
That's right. Who cares about those details? Okay, did that right. Okay. Blah, blah. Okay. Thanks for being flexible, Yvonne. Shall we go?
Yeah, go.
Okay. Here we go. Make sure this is live. Bloop, bloop. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. It is just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Our agenda is going to be like the normal agenda, I guess. We are doing this a little bit early, so I don't know about a normal agenda.
I mean, we would probably do a shortened agenda. We are bored, you know, because
it hasn't been that long since the
last book. Exactly. Right.
Well, you know, there's things and happened and I got stuff. Okay. So I owe an explanation. We usually record these days, like over the course of this podcast, which we started in 2007.
Jesus Christ.
Long time ago. But we have recorded on different days. When we first started this thing, we used to record on Sundays. And then there was a period of time where we recorded on, we shifted all over the place. For a while, it was like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it could be any of the above. More recently, it's usually been Friday or Saturday with sometimes Thursday, and I'm talking U.S. time right now, shifted all, like, you know. But anyway, but I've made sure there's been one episode per week no matter what. So we are doing it early this week because I will be indisposed later in the week, as they say. And so I'll give the reason why. I'm going to have some surgery.
Yay!
Isn't that exciting?
So what is it? Finally, we're doing the lobotomy?
Yes. I don't need any of that brain anymore. It's right. Served its purpose. It's done.
Yeah. Okay. You know, what the hell?
No,
So it's not the lobotomy.
It's not the lobotomy. And I'm actually getting two surgeries.
You're not getting some kind of enlargement surgery that we know of.
Well, you know, I could, but no. No, I'm actually getting two surgeries. It's very exciting. Both of them are outpatient. So in theory, I will only be there for a few hours for each of these. One going on Thursday, one going on Friday. But they basically said, like, you're probably still going to feel awful for a while after the surgeries. So I didn't want to try to, like, have surgery in the daytime and do the podcast in the evening or even worry about editing the podcast afterwards. I wanted to take care of it. So my disclosure is it's a basal cell carcinoma on my nose.
Okay.
So that apparently, there'd been a place on my nose that like would occasionally like bleed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whatever. It's like a zit or whatever. It's a pimple that got, you know, whatever. But it kept coming back, like in the same spot. Like not all the time, like every few months it would pop up. And eventually I'm like,
every couple of months. Every couple of months it would start bleeding again.
Yeah.
Because I have a spot that it's actually, I've had to check that my family suffers from like little veins that pop.
Right.
So I had a spot where that's been the case. I had one, like it was around in my nose that my sister-in-law being a doctor and a wannabe surgeon, during dinner, pulled out a scalpel and just cut it off.
Like, I'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, basically, she was like, that's just a vein. I'll take out right here. Boom.
Did she at least like sterilize it and stuff?
No. Well, I mean, the stuff was sterile. Yes. But right. Then when she did, it started bleeding like a lot. Okay. Now she did have something to stop the bleeding, but she didn't have it handy because she didn't expect it to start bleeding that much at that moment. So then she had to apply something there to stop the bleeding. But yeah, I got it. I had this kind of stuff done at dinner.
Yeah, well, very nice. I am not having it done at dinner. No, so anyway,
if Brandy came out with a scalpel heading towards you, you'd be like, oh, shit. Wait, what? No. Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, so anyway, like every few months this would come back. And eventually, and by eventually, I mean nearly 3 years, I brought this up to my general practitioner, my regular family doctor on a routine visit. And she takes a look at it and is like, yeah, let's send you to the dermatologist. And so a few weeks later, I go to the dermatologist and they take a sample, you know, and went off and tested it. And yep, basal cell carcinoma. So for those of you who don't know, because I wouldn't have known this off the top of my head before, that is a skin cancer. It's the most common form of skin cancer, but it's known to, it grows very, very, very slowly. And
right.
And it's incredibly rare that it migrates and spreads to other parts of the body.
But you need to take care of it.
But you need to take care of it. Like it, and it, you know, it very, very rarely turns serious either. Like people very rarely die of this, you know, but yeah, you want to take care of it anyway. Like, cause you don't want to press your luck and be one of the fraction of a percent where it does spread and become more serious or anything like that. So anyway, what they're doing is what's called Mohs surgery, which is extremely fun sounding. A friend of ours, Yvonne and I's, had this done as well. She sent me pictures. It was very exciting. Apparently, my stepmother also had this done at one point. It's a fairly common thing. But basically, the way I envision it, it does not actually work this way. But I imagine them going in with, you know, an ice cream scoop or a melon baller and just like scooping out stuff. But the basic idea of it is that they do a little bit at a time. They take out a little bit, then they go test it and see, did they get everything? And if they did, then you're done. If they didn't, they go back in and take more and repeat until you're done. And so anyway, that's the procedure I've got going on Thursday. On Friday, I have to go back in because they expect that the hole they're going to make in my nose is big enough that it's going to need plastic surgery to repair. So, and apparently exactly what procedure they'll do will depend on exactly how big the hole ends up being. But what they told me they're kind of expecting is a procedure where they basically take, you know, a flap of skin from my forehead and like bend it down and shove it in and fill up the hole with it. So that's my fun. The Thursday procedure is I'm going to be awake for, but the Friday one is going to be my very first experience with general anesthesia. So that'll be fun, I guess. Is fun the right word, Yvonne?
Oh, it's exciting. It's tingling.
Have you done general?
No.
No.
Yes, for a colonoscopy.
Now, I had a colonoscopy. But I remember them making me loopy, but not completely.
No. The way that they've done the colonoscopy, I've been completely out. I mean, I basically at the start done, and all of a sudden I wake up in a recovery room and I have no recollection of anything.
See, because when I had the colonoscopy, I remember being awake enough to ask them to please turn the screen so I could see too.
No. I don't know what the hell kind of fucking like place you're going to. No, I went to a place where I was completely, completely out.
No, I was like, I want to see. And they were like describing what I was looking at while they were shoving the thing in me, you know? So yeah. Cause you know, they had it up on a big screen and I could see and do it, you know, now I was completely like high. And like, I imagine for part of it, I might not have been fully, you know, aware, but I was aware for enough of it So it definitely wasn't fully general anesthesia.
No, I was completely out.
Yeah. So no, and my son Alex has had general a couple times for the dentist because he wouldn't cooperate with them otherwise when he was younger. So, you know, so I know this is a completely routine procedure, but still I'm like, I'm going to spend 2 days going through procedures. And they told me basically expect to like be uncomfortable and have bandages all over your face for a week. So I'm actually taking not only Thursday and Friday this week, but all of next week off from work. And on the one hand, I'm like, ooh, a week off. I can do all kinds of stuff. I can get stuff done. But on the other hand, I'm like, you know, basically they've told me do as little as possible for that week. You know, you don't, right. You're not going to be feeling great. It's going to be uncomfortable. You don't want to do active things that'll like, I don't know, rip out stitches or whatever. You know, just do as little as possible. But I figure I can sit at my desk and do stuff probably, or maybe I'll just be watching TV the whole time. I don't know. But, you know, anyway, so that's why we're doing this early. We're, you know, usually the latest we were ever usually, like I said, UTC-wise, it's usually Thursday or Friday. No. UTC-wise, it's usually Friday or Saturday. Very occasionally Thursday. This time, we're recording on Monday evening, U.S. time, Tuesday UTC. So way early for us, but, you know, whatever. That's my excuse. I have an excuse, damn it.
Yeah. Yes, you do have an excuse.
So anyway.
Okay, so now that we've eaten the excuse to death.
We'll do a butt first. And then we'll see how the other rest goes. Maybe it'll all be a butt first. Maybe I'll just do a whole bunch of movies.
If we could do that, I guess.
Yeah, no, we don't. We do have a couple real things, but like, do you have any?
No, we'll skip the butt first today. Okay, this is so on this short show. We'll skip the butt first.
Okay, so what's your first real topic then? I guess I did my first topic.
Well, first real topic is quite simple. Mr. President, that doesn't shut up today, tank the markets again.
Again.
Yeah.
I was kind of busy at work, but I did notice that was happening.
He is insisting on Jerome Powell lowering rates, and he keeps telling people he wants to fire Powell, okay? Right. Which the markets are basically, there's already a brewing, I'm not going to say it's at a crisis of confidence level yet, but certainly he has shaken confidence in the...
Wasn't it already shaken?
He has already shaken, but shaken it further.
Right.
Okay. Yes. The confidence in our monetary system, an economic system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... He won't shut the fuck up. And
why would he? It's going so well so far.
A number of reports would indicate otherwise, Sam, that right now, in terms of 100 days for a president.
Yes.
In the modern history, this is about as bad in terms of approval, in terms of markets, in terms of everything that it's ever gone for any president ever. And yet we wonder why he bankrupted casinos.
I've heard that's hard to do.
It is. It's very hard. I mean, some casinos, and the thing is, bankrupt casinos, not where, you know, there were certain casino companies that borrowed too much money and they had trouble servicing the debt. But the casinos themselves were making money, okay? So it was just, they just, you know, borrowed too much money of too high an interest rate. And so that caused them to be unable to pay the debt service. But the casino itself, the operation was solid. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah.
In his case, he did that where he borrowed the money bad and the casino was run like shit. So, you know, so that's how he managed to do that. Achievement, you know, it's very how do I say, he's very innovative in that way. And so he's doing the same here. You know, I mean, it's just a bunch of idiot incompetence. He's basically dictating policy. It seems like Scott Bessent, it's one of the few that are non-lunatics around him.
You know what that means though, Yvonne?
Yeah, what?
He's going to fire him soon? Any day now. Yes, any day now.
I don't know.
Because he keeps telling him to like that, calm down, well, not do crazy things.
Well, he's been doing stuff not in that way, as far as I've heard. The one thing that he did the last time, I think he did call on some people to appear on Fox Business News. Well, which, by the way, that's how you talk to him, right? And talk about how bad shit is. And then what he did is that apparently he showed him some kind of simple charts on the problems with the bond market. And I guess he could understand those. He said, hey, you're trying to drive down interest rates. Look at this. They're selling them off. It's going the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you yammer about this. So that kind of helped for a little bit, but it hasn't held. He keeps yammering away. By the way, another interesting thing, you know, that they had to negotiate 90 trade deals in like 90 days.
Yes.
How many do you think he's done?
None.
You would be correct.
Well, they're all going to come on day 89.
Ah, that's what it is.
They're going simultaneously.
Ah, that's what it is. Here's
the thing. I presume a few of these will actually get negotiated. I mean, he doesn't actually have to do 90. There's like four or five that really matter, right? And as we've talked about before, it could just be like, we change one comma in whatever agreements already existed, and he can declare victory, and you're done. You know, it doesn't have to be a substantive.
Well, change. I mean, he's going to... Here's a problem. There's 90 of these. Here's the other thing, okay? Look, some people are just right now refusing to play ball.
Well, and like...
They're just so pissed off. They're just like, fuck you. We're not going to play ball.
Well, right. Because there's no, even if you did, there's no trust that anything you do would matter. Like, you mentioned, well, last week you talked about in a different context, the renegotiation of NAFTA, right?
Right.
Well, and it changed some really minor things and Trump declared.
Very minor.
But here's the thing. Trump got into office. Yeah. Trump got back into office and he ripped it to shreds. Right. So what good was that agreement?
Right. What good was the Canada and Mexico going and negotiating with him when just a short amount of time later, he would just renege on everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's doing that left. Like most of what he's doing with tariffs is violating one previous agreement or another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone
like
pointed
20
out,
of those countries around that number had free trade agreements with the United States already.
And someone pointed out, like, it's not just like a standard bit of international affairs that everyone has typically assumed in the past is that if a country signs a treaty or signs an agreement, even if it's not an official treaty, then subsequent governments of that country are still bound by that agreement. And so, you know, you have governments come and go, but the new government respects the previous agreements. And how that even happened when, like, big changes, like the Soviet Union becomes Russia plus all the independent states, right?
Right.
Like, even then, those obligations were carried forward. Donald Trump has shown that he not only doesn't care about agreements signed by other presidents, he doesn't care about the agreements he signed himself. I mean, and in that scenario, how can you possibly trust anything? And what point is there in doing the negotiation other than to end up effectively genuflecting to Donald Trump? And, you know, and maybe in the short term, he'll let you off the hook. Like, I mean, we had a couple rounds of this at the beginning with Canada, Mexico, and Colombia, where basically he's like, tariffs! And then they're like, hey, why don't we do this that we were going to do anyway? But why don't we do this? And he's like, okay, delay in the tariffs. You know, but there's only, how many cycles of that is anybody going to be willing to go through?
Well, yeah, and it's just that right now, I think, The Chinese, for example, are just fed up. They've decided that they're not. He said, yeah, they're done. They said, oh, bring us a proposal. And he's like, and they're like, why? What for? Why? You know, listen, you're the one that started the trade war. What are your demands? What are you asking for? I mean, that's reasonable. Because this thing of asking about, you know, that he's asking for, like, to balance the trade, it's just nuts. Okay? It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, how do we do it? You know, you want us to balance the trade? How? What the hell are we buying from you that we can use for an extra couple of $100 billion in terms of merchandise? Because again, they're not looking at services. They're not looking at anything else.
Right. No, I figure.
And like everybody has made as an example, it's like the whole thing, like going to a grocery store and getting pissed off at them. Yeah. Hey, I have a trade imbalance with you. You need to buy back from me, like, you know, $12,000 a year of stuff. You know,
like it seems like, you know, and I know the impact on some countries will be significant, but it seems like in almost all these cases, given how irrational and how inconsistent Donald Trump is, the only real response is like, dude, do whatever you're going to do. We're just going to ignore you. Like, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, we're not going to respond. I mean, some of them are retaliating, but like, just, I feel like just doing nothing and ignoring it and saying, okay, you're hurting yourself with the tariffs. Yeah, we get some collateral damage on our side. We'll figure out how to deal with it is probably the smartest. Now, there are a few countries like China specifically, if they really wanted to get aggressive here, like I mentioned on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, and this is really extreme, and there are all kinds of reasons why they wouldn't do this, but China could theoretically say, you know what? You don't want our goods? We're just going to stop. Complete outright ban on exports to the United States for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever.
They could do that. I mean, you know, they've done already. One of the things that they did was, you know, they're not allowing Boeing to deliver airplanes to Chinese airlines, like right now.
Yeah, no, definitely that. But what I'm saying is like, you know,
no, but that's an aggressive move is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, okay? that's aggressive. What I'm saying is like the move I suggested.
No, I know, which is to suspend everything that they don't ship anything to us. But what I'm saying is that they haven't escalated it to that level.
I'm saying is in that scenario, it would basically be like, you don't want our stuff. Feel the pain of not having our stuff because you have no idea how much of what your people consume on a daily basis is from here. Right. And like, see how long it takes until you scream uncle.
Right. I mean, yeah, they could do that, but that also would be quite economically painful.
Oh, it would hurt them too. Absolutely.
But China
has shown through what their response to the pandemic was, they're willing to accept some pain.
Listen, they're already accepting pain, like right now. Look, there is a lot of canceled orders, increased costs, shit like that that is already happening with these tariffs in place, like right now. And they're accepting that pain, like right now. And they're accepting the pain because they figure, and rightly so, that they can withstand more pain than we can. Because it's less tenable politically over here. Right. You know, she doesn't have to run for an election nobody over there has to run really for an election. They're not worried about the next election. The Republicans have to worry about midterms pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And special elections and some other stuff. And they already have an amount of pain inflicting on people that is already hurting a lot of their constituents, that it's already showing up in the approval ratings for the president. I mean, for the first time ever, finally, I get, you know, it took this to beat this into people's heads. The Democrats right now finally have an edge on handling the economy in recent surveys. It took, you know, Biden losing. Well, right. The Democrats losing because Biden wasn't running. And for Trump to once again display his lack of any skills at doing this, for people to, I mean, realize geez, these Republicans are really shitty at this, aren't they? I mean, they've done it to us over and over. Over and over, Sam. My lifetime.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I don't get it. How the hell they skate with this shit? Oh, yeah, they're better on the economy. Look, back in the 80s, we had the SNL crisis. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That fucking SNL crisis was due to basically Republican-led deregulation of these damn savings and loans, which basically they just were out there totally unregulated, just fucking like loaning money left and right. And, you know, we had half a trillion dollars of bad loans out there. And we had to pick up the mess. And it caused a big recession. And, you know, and so that was the first time. Then W came along, more deregulation, fucked us again with, you know, the 2008 crash, which was the biggest part of it was also deregulation of the financial sector. Once again, they nailed us with lack of oversight, and the financial sector just took crazy risk again and fucked us over again, okay? Second time, okay? And then, you know, look, Trump, what has he done? I mean, the first time, he kind of like coasted through and like did some tax breaks, but the reality is, and look, he grossly mismanaged the pandemic. Okay.
Yep.
That's just a fact. Okay. The pandemic was way worse, and people have been at each other's throats and angrier because of him.
Yep.
Period. End of discussion. Biden comes in, the economy, he did a lot of actions that actually did a lot of the things that he purportedly said he was going to do. Infrastructure week, Sam. Remember how many infrastructure weeks we had under the first Trump? He didn't pass a single fucking infrastructure bill.
The wall.
Then Biden gets the wall. Oh, yeah. We got about 3 or 4 miles of wall. And then Biden passed an infrastructure bill. And then this motherfucker comes back and he starts like basically trying to undermine it, even though it's the shit that he wanted done in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is just. Oh, and bringing back manufacturing, also undermining that one, because, I mean, Biden knew that you can't just force them to bring the factories back. So, hey, let's big incentives. Hey, let's target certain industries. Let's go and let's electric cars, clean energy.
That's important. It's not
chips.
it's not just like let's bring back sock
sneaker manufacturers.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like the
let's
survey
do clean
showed.
It's let's do clean energy stuff, but of
let's
course
do the, let's do the future because, you know, the past, you know, hey, we're not.
No, no.
We're not gonna...
Yvonne, clean coal is the
future. Ah, the clean coal. Yes, I forgot.
Or what does he call it? Beautiful clean coal?
Beautiful clean coal, something like that. Yes, yeah. Yes, the beautiful clean coal. What the fuck, man? So he goes and he spent the whole fucking weekend trying to badger Powell to lower rates.
Yep.
Pete on our Slack mentioned probably quite accurately that, and I'm pretty sure he is right on this, that part of the reason why Carter inherited such a bad financial situation was because Nixon did the same thing in the early 70s with the oil shock and shit, because inflation was going through the roof and the economy was in the crapper, and then he wanted the Fed to lower interest rates. Problem is, as I've said here repeatedly, is it's very inflationary. And so, you know, Carter wound up with this inflation that was like raging because of all this shit that Nixon had put in place between the oil embargo and that kind of stuff, the policies that he did that weren't helping that situation. And, you know, he wound up in a very difficult situation. And so this shit is likely to do the same kind of crap. It's not a great outcome, Sam.
Now let's mention for a second, like the scenario, like according to the law as it exists, Donald Trump cannot actually remove the Fed chair.
That's correct. Yes.
Now,
it hasn't stopped him from trying.
Now, if I understand correctly, he could theoretically remove him for cause. And that's the loophole, because he can make up a cause. Right. And then the question is like, well, what's the, you know, who adjudicates whether the cause is good enough?
Right. To go to the courts.
It'll have to go to courts. It'll have to go up to SCOTUS. And then SCOTUS will have to decide, like, can the president decide on his own authority?
Sam, have you noticed something that's happened the last couple of weeks with SCOTUS?
They have been going against Trump more often.
But not just that. It's not just going against Trump. It's the speed.
Yes, they have been acting relatively quickly. Now
they sent out like a fucking like ruling the other day at one in the, you know, in the middle of the fucking night. Okay. Yeah.
Because they were looking to stop some additional deportation flights that were about to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
It all of a sudden, you know, these assholes enabled this whole fucking scenario.
These same assholes who decided to take 9 months to issue a ruling on presidential immunity and all this.
Right. Kind of stuff. And then issue one that basically is just, you know, preposterous. Let's be clear about this. And basically enabled this guy to think he could act with impunity. Now all of a sudden are like, oh shit, you know, and worse. I mean, they declared, for example, that
he could legally run
for president. And that the only people
Alito did put in a dissent saying that the rest of the court was being hasty.
Yeah.
Rushed and hasty.
Here's the interesting thing. The only two guys that put in those objections was Alito and fucking Thomas. Not even his appointees were on board with his shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're still barreling towards I predicted last week that Trump would not make it an explicit confrontation with the court and try to like basically say he's following what they say while still not actually following what they say. But we'll see. Like, I think we've got several more issues that are going to come back to SCOTUS. I think this is escalating.
Here's the thing that's happening right now. One of the things that he was counting on was SCOTUS
rubber stamping what he did.
Or taking their time.
Right.
Because the one thing that he's always is delay, delay, delay. Well, all of a sudden, SCOTUS has been, oh, fuck these delays. No, we're sending out something like quick
now,
which kind of short circuits a big part of his MO, okay, by moving that quickly. But, you know, again, these are the assholes that went and ruled that for some reason the fucking constitutional amendment, which basically said that he should not have been allowed to run for fucking president. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just Congress is the one that decides. I'm like, you know, fuck, that's not what it said. It didn't say any of that.
Well, we don't have to rehash that one,
but that's my point.
Congress should have passed legislation a century or more ago on how to go about that. Like there was some legislation in the aftermath of the Civil War, but it expired. It had an expiration date on it. Yeah. In terms of defining what the procedures were to determine who was affected.
Yeah, I didn't realize that legislation existed. If it had that already in place, that, you know, why the fuck did they act like it was just Congress? Like, I mean, it's just...
Well, Congress did that legislation. I mean, basically, and in the wake of the Civil War, Congress passed actual legislation that defined how to...
But how was the process? I mean, do you recall?
I don't remember what the process was. There was a process that expired like X number of decades after the Civil War because they put an end date on it.
Well, they enabled the monster.
Yes.
And so now they've got to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah. And I think we still have a situation where it is situational, like how many of the justices will be on which side. But we've had a sequence of cases over the last couple of weeks where the court has clearly had the majority for, yeah, no, this is not okay. Yeah. Like,
Only two guys that are like just you know on the hard line on some occasions, because even in one case they went 9-0, they were like totally unanimous. But in the ones that the only guys that are peeling off are Alito and Thomas,
right? So we shall see things up and down in the courts. Any market predictions for the rest of the week?
Oh, I don't.
It depends what crazy thing Trump says tomorrow.
the futures were up a little bit today. I don't know. You know,
you see how Aish is doing right now. We go and like put it on. I mean, I don't know. I did turn it off, but I don't know. It's just, look, it's we're not going back to highs anytime soon. I'll tell you that right
you
now.
You think it'll be a while?
It's going to be a while, except in gold. Gold keeps soaring. It's just ridiculous the amount of the percentage that gold is up right now. Since I bought gold in early February, right now it's up 16%. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even 3 months.
Nice.
Okay. It's just crazy that gold is up that much in such a brief period of time.
Okay. Let's take a break and then we can do at least two more things. We'll see about more than that. But so this break, I mentioned last week that the next break was supposed to be a Wiki of the Day break.
Oh, wait, I was going to give the Asia market something.
Oh, Asia.
Flat, a little, Asia's maybe a little bit down, kind of flat. Nothing to write home about right now.
Okay.
The futures for tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
They were showing up last time I checked, slightly up for the U.S. So
buy, right? Yeah. Buy the dip. Like, Is it time to buy the dip yet?
No, it's not time to buy the dip. Try to tell people it's not even close to buying the fucking dip. Maybe look, if Trump has a heart attack tomorrow, then it's time to buy.
What if you've just stuck to and maintained dollar cost averaging over this whole period? Just keep at it.
Well, listen, one thing I would say is like during this time, I think that if you've got a program like buying, like say your IRA, for example, like your 401k depositing, you should continue buying because these are at low prices. What I'm saying is that if you sold a significant position, like a few months, like the gold I sold,
but
I am not moving right now from gold into something. I expect at some point to do a pivot on that, but it's not right now.
Right.
Okay. It's not, and I don't expect it to be in the next couple of months either.
Okay. So anyway, I was saying last week I was supposed to use a Wiki of the Day break, but I didn't have time. I didn't prepare it. So this week, as I was going to prepare the Wiki of the Day break, my son Alex came and had a specific request. Like I normally just pick randomly one of the three current Wiki of the Days whenever I include one here. But Alex did not want that. Alex had a specific episode from last year that he wanted me to include. So we went and found that episode from last year. It was from last June. And I will use that as the break. It's not the special Curmudgeon's Corner version of Wiki of the Day. It's the actual full episode. But here we go. A special Alex selection for a Wiki of the Day that is especially meaningful to him and that we hope will be meaningful to you too.
Welcome to Featured Wiki of the Day, your daily dose of knowledge from Wikipedia's finest articles. The featured article for Wednesday, June 26, 2024 is torture. Torture is the deliberate infliction of severe pain or suffering on a person for various reasons, including punishment, extracting a confession, interrogation for information, or intimidating third parties. Some definitions are restricted to acts carried out by the state, but others include non-state organizations. Most victims of torture are poor and marginalized people suspected of crimes, although torture against political prisoners or during armed conflict has received disproportionate attention. Judicial corporal punishment and capital punishment are sometimes seen as forms of torture, but this label is internationally controversial. A variety of methods of torture are used, often in combination. The most common form of physical torture is beatings. Since the 20th century, many torturers have preferred non-scarring or psychological methods to provide deniability. Torturers more commonly act out of fear or due to limited resources than sadism. Although most torturers are thought to learn about torture techniques informally and rarely receive an explicit order, they are enabled by organizations that facilitate and encourage their behavior. Once a torture program is begun, it usually escalates beyond what is intended initially and often leads to involved agencies losing effectiveness. Torture aims to break the victim's will and destroy their agency and personality and is cited as one of the most damaging experiences that a person can undergo. Many victims suffer both physical damage, chronic pain is particularly common, and mental sequelae. Although torture survivors have among the highest rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, many are psychologically resilient. Torture has been carried out since ancient times. Still, in the 18th and 19th centuries, many Western countries abolished the official use of torture in the judicial system, although torture continued to be used throughout the world. Public opinion research has shown general opposition to torture. Torture is prohibited under international law for all states under all circumstances and is explicitly forbidden by several treaties. Opposition to torture stimulated the formation of the human rights movement after World War II, and torture continues to be an important human rights issue. Although prevention efforts have been of mixed effectiveness, institutional reforms and elimination of incommunicado detention have had positive effects. Although its incidence has declined, torture is still practiced in most countries. This recording reflects the Wikipedia text as of 2:05 UTC on Wednesday, June 26, 2024. For the full current version of the article, search Wikipedia for torture. This podcast uses content from Wikipedia under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. Visit our archives at wikioftheday.com and subscribe to stay updated on new episodes. Follow us on Mastodon at wikioftheday at masto.ai. Also check out Curmudgeon's Corner, a current events podcast. Until next time, I'm Neural Joanna.
Well, there we go.
Wow.
Was it as touching for you as it is for Alex? Do you have warm and fuzzies inside from...
No, not exactly, no. From a fucking, like, you know, academic, you know, discussion on torture. Yeah, I just, you know, try to.
Okay. I guess it's my turn.
Yes.
I guess I added some things to
remind you certain things.
Yes.
As we were...
Yes, I saw you adding things. But, you know, I'm going to do my movie.
Okay, go to you. Go. All right, go movie. All right. What do we got?
My movie.
Twilight Zone?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well,
Twilight Zone's a TV show if you're looking on.
Oh, yeah. It's a TV show, not a movie.
But no, Adiparush.
Okay.
I don't know what
the fuck this is.
So, it's because it's an Indian movie in Hindi or Telugu.
I'm looking at, before you continue,
yes.
I looked it up.
Okay, yes.
Wow. This is interesting. It has a 2.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
Uh-huh.
And it has a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Holy shit, that's not good. I mean, a 2.7 on IMDb has to be one of the worst movies on IMDb. It has to be.
So let me tell you. So first of all, this is the first one we've watched that's like an Indian language movie. I think we watched the Hindi version with English subtitles. But look. My experience while watching it was just, oh my God, this is so bizarre. Okay.
Yeah.
And part of this was like, I was like, is this just what Bollywood is like? I haven't watched a real Bollywood movie before. And this wasn't really like the song and dance kind, although there was a little bit of that.
Okay. So by the way, yes. I just looked it up.
Yes.
It is ranked as not the worst one on IMDb, but it is 30th. Okay. Yes, it is. It's a bit, that basically means there's only 29 movies that are worse than Nip on IMDb.
Yes. So just to read the Wikipedia summary real quick. The name translates to The First Man. It's a 2023 Indian mythological action film inspired by the Hindu epic Ramayana. It was heavily panned by critics and audience alike, who critiqued the screenplay, dialogues, and visuals. It emerged as a box
everything, basically. Bomb. There's nothing good about it. Not the writing, not the acting, and not any of the special effects, not the filming, nothing.
So here's the thing, though. When I was watching it, I was just sort of stunned by, like...
How bad it was?
Well, the thing is, it was so stylized as well. And I honestly wasn't sure, is it supposed to be this way? Like, is it over the top and bad on purpose? And like, you know, I did some, it is almost at the point where it's bad enough to be entertaining by how bad it is. Okay.
Like, but you said almost, but almost. Apparently almost, but not there.
You know, well, you know, like there's that other one. What was the other bad one you sent me to that we've talked about on the show before that you watched? The one where the bounty hunter guy trying to rescue the woman who'd been kidnapped. It was really low budget, really bad.
Low blow.
Yes.
Low blow. Yeah.
Low blow.
Listen, we walked out of the theater on low blow.
Low blow. Was bad in a way that was just bad.
It was just bad. There were no redeeming qualities.
You couldn't even laugh at how bad it was.
No.
This, on the other hand, I will say, like, the whole time, it did have my attention. Because I was like, what the fuck is going on now? Like, there were just crazy things happening. There were just weird special effects. Like, apparently one of the criticisms this got when it was released was, apparently there was a trailer that went out where the special effects were really horrible. And so they improved the special effects before they released the movie, but it was still really bad. And, you know, but they're just sort of, the whole thing was surreal. It was surrealistic. And like, and it just, I'm actually going to give it a thumb sideways, not a thumbs down, you know.
Wow.
Because while I could not by any stretch of the imagination say this was good, the whole damn time I was intrigued. I was like, what the hell is going on? What is happening? Why is this happening? Now, some of it I'm sure is because like I'm not familiar with the Hindu epic that this was based on. If I was, maybe I'd have more context, but I had none of that going into this. So it was just all just weird and bizarre. And it had the surrealistic style and the bad CGI and, you know, people, you know, it's hard to even describe the damn thing. It all super saturated colors. Anyway, like, it was 179 minutes long. I can tell you right now, I would not want to watch all 179 minutes again.
Oh, Jesus, 179 minutes. Holy shit. Fucking 3-hour movie.
Yes. And, you know,
oof.
But I will say it's worth watching at least a few minutes of. Like, if you can find where this is streaming and watch a few minutes of it and just get a flavor, maybe skip around, fast forward, rewind, pick random spots in the middle. Like, the plot is incoherent enough to an outsider who doesn't know this that I don't think it matters where in the movie you start. You just pick a random spot and watch 5 to 10 minutes. And you'll get the idea. And, you know, again... My fundamental reaction was being stunned, being like, what the hell am I watching? I don't get it, but it's somehow still drawing me in to like, not quite a train wreck kind of way, more like, you know, and I honestly haven't done this, so I'm talking via anecdote, but like some kind of psychedelic trip. You know, it's just like weird and bizarre and colorful. And, you know, so I don't have any real psychedelic trips to compare it to in my history, but it's what I imagine that would be like. So there you go. Thumb sideways for Adipurush, Adipurush. I don't know the right way to pronounce it. I'm sorry.
No. Better.
A-D-I-U-R-U-S-H. And
you're giving it a thumb sideways.
And I'm pretty sure I watched the Hindi version, but apparently it was released both in Hindi and Telugu from the beginning. But it didn't matter. I don't know either one of those languages.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, what the hell? Like, what makes a fucking difference? But I'm like, I'm assuming, obviously, it's subtitled.
Yes, I watched the English
subtitles. Not dubbed. Okay.
English subtitles. Yeah, I try to be like, I try to avoid dubbing, like, for almost everything. Like, I will search out the subtitled version. Like, we aren't at this yet, but there was a Godzilla movie that we watched later from this, where the first place I found it streaming was dubbed. And I actually went and bought a DVD of the movie so that I could get a subtitled version instead of a dubbed version.
When I was in Puerto Rico, when I was growing up, movies in the theaters were, actually, I haven't been to a movie in the theater in Puerto Rico, but I'm assuming this is still the case. They're always subtitled in Spanish. Okay. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico, they did not play dubbed versions. And thank God. Okay. They always had just subtitled versions of all the movies. Okay. But on TV, local TV, everything was dubbed. Okay. All the TV programs, everything was dubbed. And at first growing up, I was like, whatever. I didn't know anything else. But when I first started, except movies on TV, movies at the theater.
Right.
Then when I started to be able to get some of these versions, like a lot of it, like in English, because I knew English. Okay. So it became like really, really irritating where I was just like, I don't want anything else dubbed ever again, please, if I can avoid it. I just cannot. I really, the ones that I will say that actually were not that bad. They were actually good. The cartoons. I will say that I don't know if they did something with it additionally in order to make it that it wasn't dubbed, but watching the Flintstones in Spanish, you know what? Listen, they got some guy that did a good Fred Flintstone in Spanish. Okay. All right. And you know, you don't have, so it worked out. It was actually pretty good. Okay. The Flintstones in Spanish, they were funny. Okay. Whereas almost every other TV program that was dubbed was just, it was just annoying. Yeah,
I mean, like the thing is with live action, you definitely have the misalignment between what you're seeing on the screen and the talking. And that does go away in the cartoon because it's a voice actor anyway.
Yes. It's a voice actor anyway.
The lips don't match exactly anyway, you know?
Nope.
But you know, even there, I feel like I would want that, like, I don't have a current show like this, but there are shows on my list that if I ever start them are cartoons where the original language is not English. I would still seek out the original language, you know, just to be more authentic.
For most of them, you're right. It just happened to be that the Flintstones in Spanish turned out to be pretty damn good. You know, whoever they got to play the characters in Spanish actually worked out very well. And the names they picked in the translations were also hilarious, okay? Because they didn't call it, it wasn't Fred Flintstone in Spanish. It was Pedro Picapiedra, okay? Mm. And that name was actually pretty damn good. You know, Barney Rubble was Pablo Marmol, for example. And all those names are names that you talk in Spanish. It's one of those things where that one, so whoever did it, really took the time. No, we got to make this right so this works, okay? And they really did, you know, whoever they picked for the voiceovers and whatever, they had a very similar, like, they knew how to play the character, okay,
right,
as well. So they did a good job. But on many of them, they reuse the same voice actors for a whole bunch of fucking TV programs. So it's really annoying because it's like you're watching, say, the $6 million man, and then you're watching Magnum, but I'm like, what the fuck's the same goddamn voice on both different programs? This is really annoying.
Although I gather in some cases now for cartoons, because they're building for an international audience to begin with, it's getting harder to determine what is the original language because right off
listen,
they're animating it once with the intention of we're going to hire casts for 15 languages.
That was like that. Okay, for example, and my son watched when he was little was Pocoyo, which is from Spain originally.
Right.
And they had an English version of Pocoyo as well. You know, they actually had two different English versions, I remember. One for British English,
yep.
for American English. And the one
I've watched all three versions of Pocoyo.
And so the thing is that one was one that really, you know, it's very obvious that they planned it for all three languages. But I will say, I definitely liked it. It's a lot better in Spanish. That one, I cannot argue that one. I was like, to me, it was like a little bit annoying. I'm like, oh, fuck, there's, oh, God,
I think,
I recorded an English episode.
Thing is, even if they know from the beginning they're going to, you know, have voice acting casts for like 20 languages, they're writing the episode first in one language. That's the one I want to find. Because that's the one that's going to be most natural and closer to the intent.
Yeah.
But if I don't know the language, I'm still going off the captions, and there's still liberties taken with captions. If nothing else, you know, you have to translate the idioms to something that makes sense
for the
language you're in. Because like you'd be like, what? Because idioms don't translate literally, you know, usually. But also, I've noticed we always watch TV with the captions on. And so one of the things that Alex and I regularly do is notice when the captions don't match what the person said. And it's all the fucking time. Even in English captions for an English show, they're mismatches all the time. Most commonly, it's like shortened phrases, like where, you know, they simplify the sentence.
Sure.
To get it on the screen. But sometimes it's just completely different. And it's like,
I'll tell you, the one that was like hilarious beyond that was, I always loved when they translated movie titles for posters, mm-hmm. where it's just that some of the movie titles played, but some, it was just like, wait, what? It's called in Spanish, what? Since we were like just laughing. I'm like, what the? The names that they picked made just no sense, like whatsoever. You were just like, okay, sure, you know. Oh, I don't know. So anyway,
okay,
all right,
your turn. Well, pick a topic.
My turn. Pick a topic. So is Hacksett gonna be out?
You know, when that first signal thing happened, my prediction was that there would be heads that rolled because...
But it wasn't his.
No, my prediction was, but there'd be a delay.
Okay.
It would not be immediate. There'd be a long enough period of time such that you could do it without tying it directly back to the signal instant.
Okay.
But, and also I said, with this particular group of people, they will have done something else by then anyway.
Right.
And Hegseth, how do you say his name?
Hegseth.
Anyway, he has indeed done other things. The most recent thing was another signal conversation where apparently...
With his brother and his wife on his personal phone!
Right. Talking about the same sort of classified Yemen stuff. Apparently also just... The actual internal dynamics of what's going on at the Pentagon, the place is entirely in chaos because, you know, he has no idea what he's doing. And everybody is worried and concerned and there are contradictory things going on. And so, you know, apparently, yeah, things aren't going well at the Defense Department anyway. Plus, you got this stuff going on. And he did something else, too, didn't he? Didn't he do something else, too? I don't remember. But, and apparently, Trump's rapid response team a few hours ago, like, retweeted something, a report from somewhere else, talking about how Hegseth was on his way out. And it's like, oops. Like, they so far, like, haven't, like, you know, it's not official, right? There was an NPR report saying that the administration has started to look for his replacement. That's the most solid information we have right now.
Yeah.
But that there is no official statement that says he's out. He's still acting like he's there. He said this is all bullshit.
There is one thing, though. I will say this. You know, Trump did a very strong defense of him today.
Okay.
you know, in my experience, every time that one of these guys comes out in a strong defense of somebody, it really means, oh, this guy is toast.
Yeah. Usually the we're 100% behind him statement comes about 5 minutes before the knife in the back.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Is this some kind of a record if he's gone, say, in the next couple of weeks? Is this some kind of record for the shortest tenure of a Secretary of Defense?
Ooh, good question. Let's see if we can find out anything about that.
Yeah. I mean, this has got to be some kind of record.
Wikipedia. Let's see. Like, okay. Okay, let's find out how far. So far, he's been 86 days.
Uh-huh.
Should we count? We're not counting acting.
Not counting acting.
Because apparently the acting Secretary of State immediately before Haggis was Robert G. Celesis, who served for 5 days.
Okay,
but like ignore the acting. So he's at 86 days. Lloyd Austin was 1 day short of 4 years. Mark Esper was 1 year, 109. Let's look for anybody under a year.
Yeah.
Oh, Elliot Richardson. In the Nixon administration, 114 days.
Hey, so close.
So we're at 86.
That was close.
If we fire him right now,
you'll break the record.
We could break the record. Well, I still haven't gone all the way back. That's just, then we had Clark Clifford. 125 days. That's higher.
Shit, that's way higher.
356 days for George C. Marshall. And then that's it for Secretary of Defense. Now, Secretary of Defense replaced, like, that was only created in 1947. So, like, what was the predecessor for it? See, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so what happened was the reason why he wound up leaving SecDef.
Yes.
Is because it says, after only 3 months as Secretary of Defense, Richardson becomes Nixon's Attorney General, a move that would put him in the Watergate spotlight. So I guess that was like, I guess he had gotten rid of the previous Attorney General, so he wound up needing somebody, and he said, okay, you, yeah, you.
Yeah. Oh, it was the Secretary of War before it was the Secretary of Defense. Let's see if any of them are shorter. Oh, the last Secretary of War. Kenneth Royal under Harry Truman, 61 days.
Whoa. So why was that? The hell? What happened with this guy?
Royal.
Okay, we got to look this up. Secretary of War. Kenneth Claremore, U.S. Army General, blah, 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 Truman Administration. Okay. Oh, interesting.
What happened?
I'll tell you why. Royal was forced into retirement in April 1949 for continuing to refuse to desegregate the army.
Okay. Good reason.
Good damn fucking reason.
We also had Alfonso Taft under Ulysses S. Grant, who was only 81 days. Oh, and...
Secretary of Defense, if he went under the 111 days, he would be the shortest Secretary of Defense ever.
Yeah. We also had, I want to keep going back. We had Joseph Holt, Secretary of War under James Buchanan for only 45 days. Mm-hmm. And which I believe was because the James Buchanan administration ended and Abraham Lincoln took over. But, and is that it? That's it. Going back all the way to George Washington. Those are all the ones under a year.
There you go.
So
we're close to record breaking territory. If it happens soon,
his days are numbered. I think the only question is when. Right. Like,
the guy's
Trump,
an idiot.
Yeah, the guy's an idiot. He's doing stupid things.
We knew he was an idiot before. The fucking Senate still confirmed him, even though they knew he was an idiot.
And look, we're talking idiot by Donald Trump standards.
Exactly. We're talking idiot by Donald Trump's standards. Yes.
And that's saying a lot. But yeah, I think the question is timing, though. Like, Donald Trump doesn't like to fire people because he feels like he's being pressured to fire somebody. So if there's a lot of pressure to fire him, I think Donald Trump will just dig in his heels and keep him longer. Whereas Donald Trump wants to do it quietly at a time where he can make it look like it's his own idea and it has nothing to do with whatever the scandal of the day is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. And yeah, should we do it? Should we take a break and do two more, or should we wrap it up, Yvonne?
I think we could do at least one more.
Okay. Then let's take another break. Let's see, what break am I supposed to do? Number six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Break number six. Here we go. Okay, we are back. So I guess that makes it my turn. Yeah. And I will pick The Pope Died.
The Pope Died. So J.D. Vance killed him, right?
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, at first I was like, because there had been reports that the Pope had refused to meet with him and sent an underling instead who basically yelled at J.D. Vance about immigration and being nice to immigrants. But apparently that did happen. But apparently the Pope did
give him a brief
audience afterwards.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, J.D. Vance was one of the last few people with an audience with the Pope.
Today, J.D. Vance actually posted this. I guess this is on Shitter. I cannot believe I even have to post this. The rumors running around that I killed the Pope are not true.
Wait. I thought that was a fake J.D. Vance post. Is that a real J.D. Vance post?
No, that was a real J.D. Vance post.
Did you actually confirm this? It really is?
Okay, hold on. I got it from somebody who wasn't an unreliable source, but...
Because I saw that screenshot and immediately thought it was fake.
Let's see. I don't even have a... Hold on. Can I even look at this?
Okay,
I'm on his Shitter.
Okay, you're out on the real Twitter. Okay, then I won't log into my Twitter for the first time in forever.
I'm in there, but not logged in.
I thought you couldn't see Twitter without logging
in. I am seeing posts on... Okay. I even deleted my account, but I can see...
Okay, go ahead.
It doesn't... Okay, I don't see... Hold on. I don't see it, but you see, I'm not looking at replies right now. It doesn't let me look at the
replies. It wasn't a reply, the one I saw. Was it?
Last edited 9:45 a.m. Let's see. 9:45 a.m. Problem is that these are not in chronological. Let's see. 18 hours. Oh, yeah. I don't see it. It may be fake.
It was fake.
Oh, come on. Would have been better if it was real. Anyway.
So, anyway, like, you know, he was old. He'd been in health. He'd had health issues for months and months and months.
It appears that the final... A stroke and a heart attack. Yeah. Look, I was raised Catholic, okay? But I haven't really practiced in, like...
A long time.
Forever. Even though I will say, look, I went to church like 3 times in the last 2 weeks.
For funerals.
For funerals. I mean, one of them, honestly, like you said, like, I think I mentioned this earlier. I mean, look, a lot of us may not practice Catholicism anymore, but even like in that case, it was just like, well, it's the only thing we knew how to do. What the fuck else do we do? You know, after he died. So, you know, we did a mass, you know, we got nothing else. I mean, we were all there. We hadn't been in church in like forever. None of us. But the one thing is that, even though I might have, Pope Francis is one of the popes that I agreed with on more things than any in my life. There were a couple of things where him and I that I did not agree, but I will say that on 90+% of the shit that he was trying to do, He was right.
Compared to other Catholic popes, he was quite liberal.
Well, I mean, compared to some recent popes, you got to remember Vatican's Second Council going back that made a whole bunch of the changes to the current church, including like not giving mass in Latin, for God's sakes, because nobody knows fucking Latin. Okay. And shit like that happened, you know.
We need to bring back Latin.
You know, sure.
You know, I'll go take some classes. We can start doing the show in Latin.
I'm sure that everybody will love that. But, you know, those changes like that, where there are a whole bunch of changes that happened. And so that was a very revolutionary event.
Period, yes.
And then, period. And then we had a number of more conservative popes along the way, including Benedict, who it was so bad that he wound up basically resigning, you know, because it got so bad.
Well,
and Pope Francis
resigned for health reasons.
He's still fucking alive.
Well, is he? I thought he finally.
Yes. He's still alive.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I'm just double checking you.
Oh no, he died. Okay, sorry. He died 2 years ago.
Okay.
At 95.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So he did die a couple of years ago, but he was alive a hell of a long fucking time after he quit.
Yes, he was.
I mean, but, so, you know, almost 10 years.
But I thought the reason he resigned was because he felt like he was no longer up to the job.
So there was a lot of pressure around. I mean, his health wasn't great, but there was a lot of pressure around him to fucking resign, especially because of a lot of the scandals related to child abuse and a whole bunch of things that he had done around that and related to that. Yeah, he was just, yeah. And so he felt a ton of pressure. So, but Pope Francis was a guy who was, he was a man of compassion to everybody. And even those he didn't agree with on things, okay? Unlike others. And so, you know, I saw him do many acts with people that were so kind over time and say so many things that were kind and help a lot of people. Because the Catholic Church, because of a lot of things that it did over time, man, it created a lot of shame and hurt and things in a lot of people over decades, which is why I don't practice it regularly. But, you know, he did make a lot of changes in that, in the church. He was even, you know, I know he got pushback on that, but even including like, He wanted to like be able to like bless gay unions, for example.
Right.
You know, and when you hear that and you've been a Catholic and you're gay and, you know, if you're in that and you hear that, man, the message that you're sending to people who feel that they can't leave their religion, but then all of a sudden this guy is saying, hey, you're not this person that so many others in the religion like would despise. That brings so much to people, you know. It really helps people that have been indoctrinated in this, told so many bad things about themselves, and then all of a sudden a man in the leadership goes and says, no, you're not less, no, you're not whatever, we really value you. I saw today a video where there was a child that in Italy that was in an event that the Pope was, and the child's father had recently passed away. And the child's father had been an atheist, okay? And he had been, he's a very small kid. He must have been like 6, 7, or 8. And his father had actually, even though he was an atheist, he had 4 kids and he had baptized them all. And the kid was at this event with the Pope, and the kid was sad. You know, his father had recently died, and he had a question. And he asked somebody because he didn't want to say it in public. And then the Pope said, no, look. And he has my son's name. Well, not exactly. Emmanuel. Come talk to me. So he talked to him in secret and he, you know, talked to him. He comforted him. He sent him back and he asked him if, hey, I could tell everybody what he said. And he said, yeah, he came to me with a question. My dad was an atheist. Is he going to be in heaven? You know, and he gave him a very comforting answer, you know, to him that, yes, that, you know, like, you know, you said he was a good man, God is not going to push away a good man, you know, but saying those kinds of things to these kids that have been taught this, when you're hearing it from the Pope, the comfort level that descends on these people that really truly believe that this is the ultimate word, it's big. And that's the thing that he did more than everybody else. He really took the time to say things to comfort people instead of shaming people and instead of like making people feel bad about themselves. And so, yeah, it's sad that he passed away, because he really did that a lot. I saw that there's another video. I didn't realize that a few years ago, he invited a whole bunch of very famous comedians around the world, including Jimmy Fallon and some others and whatever, basically to thank them for something important. He said that you guys all make people laugh. And it's so important for the joy of the world to have people like you that come and like make them laugh. And I wanted to show my appreciation to all of you in making the world a happier place. That was really cool, I gotta admit. So yeah.
So a couple things there. One, I'd made a joke both on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack. Well, did I do it on the Slack? I did it on Mastodon and Blue Sky. But, well, now I know what the popular wiki of the day is going to be, because it's always like a big person this.
Yeah, 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 right.
But I was wrong. Just a few seconds ago, while you were talking, the new popular wiki of the day came out. Well, it was Pope Benedict.
It was the Pope. It's just the wrong Pope.
Well, and here's why. Because for wiki of the day, I have a rule that you can't be the popular wiki of the day twice in a 100-day span. And Pope Francis, he was the popular wiki of the day back in February when he was hospitalized. It's too soon. So he didn't qualify. And so it dropped down. The number of views yesterday for UTC, the number one page views on Wikipedia was Pope Francis with 2.9 million page views. Mm-hmm. Number two was WrestleMania 41 with 980,000 views, but that also had been a previous popular wiki of the day, like yesterday or something, or the day before, I forget. And so number three was Pope Benedict the 16th. And so
WrestleMania, for God's sakes, I was just listening to people talk about this. I will say that when I was little,
yes,
I think like my brothers watched this kind of like wrestling stuff on TV, and I think I watched it for a little bit, but then I don't know. Sometime in my early teens, I was like, what is this bullshit? This is horse shit. What the fuck is this shit? This is ridiculous. But I was just seeing a whole bunch of adults today talking about, oh my God, WrestleMania, I gotta be there, gotta go. I'm like thinking, what the fuck is wrong with all of you? This thing is just complete bullshit. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. But people really love this shit.
Yeah, I know. So back to Pope stuff for a second. The one other thing to talk about on the Pope is I've only lived through a couple of these, but the selection of the new Pope is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
The sort of ancient procedures.
I recently watched that damn movie, Conclave. Recently, okay? I gotta tell you.
Yeah, you know your last segment should be Conclave.
Thumbs up on Conclave, by the way. Okay. That movie was really good. The movie was really good. I don't know what to expect. I can't remember why I wound up watching it. I think my mom won. Oh, because my mom was like, hey, I want to watch this movie a few months back. And I was at home with her and I'm like, okay, let's watch it. What the hell? And I sat her watching it. I'm like, shit, this thing's good. So yeah, Conclave is quite good. I mean, I've watched a couple of these over the years. Very interesting process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
most of it's a secret, of course, but you get they're all, you know,
when behind closed
doors and you wait for the white smoke and all this. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of speculation in terms of like, okay, did Francis appoint enough cardinals so that whoever is the next pope will like be a pope kind of like Francis, or not quite? Like, we had from Pope John Paul II to Pope Benedict, we sort of went backwards a bit, you know. So what's going to happen this time? We don't know. Like, apparently Francis did appoint quite a few cardinals, but is it enough?
Well, Well, one thing I
and did he appoint them with that in mind? I don't know.
The processes of the inner workings of the Catholic Church are, to me, still something that is just
still out of another century.
Yeah. I mean, not even this. I mean, not even like
not even a like, recent century.
Not even a recent century. Right. You know, I remember actually having spoken to a couple of people in the Catholic Church that had worked at the Vatican for a while, and it's just always their stories about that were always kind of always fascinating about how things happened at the Vatican. You know, it happened. I remember that it happened to be that the guy who was a principal of our high school wound up being somebody that he wound up being a representative of the Vatican for his religious order for a couple of years. Somebody else I met, I think it was a priest, I was at the Vatican. Yeah. And that came back. And so it isn't just that it's the processes are ancient. You know, the Catholic Church is a massive organization that really owns a ton of shit across the world. It's crazy. It's a business. There's a bank. It's nuts how complex it is. It is really nuts. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you look at there are many ways to look at this. This is only one of them. But in some senses, the current Catholic Church is actually the successor to the Roman Empire.
Basically,
you know, it's what's left of the Western Roman Empire. Now there are a whole bunch of different ways you can interpret the history of the fall of Rome and both Eastern and Western, but that's one way you could do it. And yeah,
so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I hope that because there are. One of the things I was reading today and where J.D. Vance sits, because he's a fucking Catholic. Now he converted, 6 years ago. But there is a group, especially in the U.S., that has very aligned themselves with the more hardened conservative types. But
the conservative Catholics, for sure.
But no. I really believe that on a global basis, that group is definitely in the minority. Based on what I've observed of who, you know, you mentioned that how many cardinals Pope Francis appointed. I mean, from what I've observed, he has moved the church definitely towards a more liberal side substantially. That's for sure. Even though it may have entrenched some groups like that. So,
well, and what's interesting too is, you know, once upon a time, like long ago at this point, like the Catholic Church was predominantly European. Now, Europe is a small portion of the global Catholic universe.
Sure.
And the whole sort of where they are theologically in terms of more liberal or more conservative or whatever varies a lot country to country.
As you go across
the world. And where exactly that balance is unclear. And also, you know, One of the things with Francis was he was the first non-European in like centuries, right? In as Pope, because he was from Argentina, if I remember right.
Yeah, he was. So,
but the question is, is there going to be another non-European? I mean, and remember, for a while it was not only European; it was only Italians.
Yeah.
It was only Italians. And then we got Pope John Paul II from Poland. And then we have Francis from Argentina. Well, even Benedict was German, right?
Benedict was German.
So we had a series of, you know,
I have to believe that it's going to be a non-European again, because I mean, Pope Francis was the first non-European. He was very popular and he was in there for 13 years. So I have to believe that it will be another non-European, I think, because the church in Europe has been on Catholic Church has been on a massive decline in Europe. So it's just, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, it's so much more global, I mean, that in terms of, well, it's not, I don't know if it's that it's expanded as much in the rest of the world as that it's decreased that much in Europe. That's basically what it is, more than that.
Right. So let me ask you a couple trivia questions here.
Okay, trivia. Okay,
let's see. So on the official list of popes, which, just to be clear, starts with a few saints in ancient history, what number was Francis, without looking it up?
What number pope?
Yes.
All right. Let me take a stab here.
And just to be clear, this list starts with Saint, like, Peter. Saint,
yeah,
pope,
right.
Number one in
right
the year
back
30
the,
A.D.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
See how close you can get.
You know, I see. So I'm going to say around 200.
266.
No, not bad. I wasn't that far off. Okay.
The 200th pope. Let me just look that up real quick. 200th pope was Urban V in the 1300s.
Wow.
1362 to 1370 was when he was pope. And he was French.
I was guessing around 60 popes every 100 years, so I wasn't that far off. Okay.
60, you mean 60 every 1,000?
I mean every 1,000, yeah. Yes. Right. Exactly. Somewhere around there. But I guess that at the beginning, there probably had to be more because lifespans were shorter.
Probably. And there was lots of violence. There were a lot of popes, I think, who didn't die naturally. I could be wrong about that. You know, just, yeah. Anyway. Okay. Was conclave your topic, or do you have one last thing you want to talk about?
No, I think we need to wrap up, Sam. It's one more subject. I think we need to wrap up.
We are done. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You know the deal. curmudgeons-corner.com for our archives and all the ways to contact us, transcripts, everything you could possibly want, including a link to our Patreon if you want to give us money at various levels. We will do various things that are exciting and new, just like the Love Boat. And at $2 a month or more, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to a Curmudgeons Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of listeners are chatting and having fun throughout the week, sharing links to news, talking about things, whatever. So Yvonne, how about one highlight from the Slack?
And then I checked something. For example, in the 3rd century, there were 30 popes.
Okay.
Okay? In the 20th century, there were 10. So yes, at the beginning, we were going through a lot more popes. You know? Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
So yeah. Let's see. All right, what do we got here? We've got a lot of stuff. Hey, Sam, did we just find aliens?
No, we did not. So there was a story that was making all the popular rounds of the best evidence yet for life on another planet. It basically claimed to detect chemicals in the atmosphere of a planet about 120 light years away, if I remember correctly, that on Earth is only known to come from life, particularly certain kinds of sea life actually created it. And if you look at the popular news stories, they're all very breathless about this, et cetera. I waited a couple days. I did share it with the Curmudgeons Corner Slack as soon as I saw it, but I waited a couple days for sort of science creators I trust to give their take on it. And they're basically lots and lots and lots of ifs. I mean, even the first story said this requires confirmation. But even with all the assumptions they make, there's a 99% chance it really is this chemical. But they make a lot of assumptions. They make assumptions about what kind of planet this is, that there's not really full agreement that it's actually that kind of planet in terms of like the general composition of the planet, you know, water versus hydrogen atmosphere versus whatever.
Well, but the thing is, I guess, that it's probably not, we can't rule it out though yet.
No, we can't necessarily rule it out, but like for this to actually be life, there's several layers of unlikely things that still have to happen. Like,
right.
And so part of it is like, there, first of all, there's these whole bunch of assumptions. Even if those assumptions are true, then there's a chance that it's not really this chemical. You know, it could be something else. They could have misidentified the chemical. And even if, you know, and even to have the, they had to make a whole bunch of assumptions to even think it was the chemical in the first place. So if any of those assumptions are wrong, then it's definitely not the chemical. But even if those assumptions are right, there's a chance they're wrong about it being the chemical. But, and then even if it is the chemical, just because we don't have evidence of that chemical being uncreated on Earth without life,
doesn't mean it can't happen somewhere.
Doesn't mean it can't happen. And in fact, we have found this chemical on comets. We have found this chemical on interstellar clouds. So we know it can be created without life. So,
well, or maybe it landed there because of life, and then the life wasn't there because comets are maybe thousands of years old.
So anyway, this is a tantalizing piece of new evidence, but it's nowhere close to being actually, okay, yeah, this is life.
Okay. Another sad news that I need to communicate. That was on our Mudge's Corner Slack. I know everybody will be disappointed by this, but Fyre Festival 2 has been postponed. Sorry, guys. I was going to go. It's
canceled. It says it's postponed.
Postponed, right.
Postponed, yeah.
Postponed until we actually do find the aliens.
Right.
So we can invite them.
Yes. I'm sure the aliens will be so thrilled with the Fyre Festival.
J.D. Vance can go.
Yeah. J.D. Vance can be the host.
Also shared on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack was somebody's meme about the Dalai Lama having now changed his plans to not meet with J.D. Vance.
Not meet with him. Yes, J.D. Vance. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the prudent move. Yes.
Okay. We are done. We are out.
If I were the Dalai Lama and I had agreed to a meeting with J.D. Vance, I know that I would be, hey, how about we cancel this fucking thing? Okay.
All right. There you go.
I would be. Yeah. So.
Okay. We're done. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week at our normal time of week, I imagine. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great week. Stay safe. Have fun. Blah, 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 blah. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, Yvonne, good night.
All right. Well, let's see. Let's get this thing uploaded.